Welcome to the Lease Option Experience. I'm John Jackson, your host, and together with my co-host, Joe Seske, we answer all of your questions about lease options in real estate. We answer questions about sandwich lease options, straight lease options, lease option assignments, also known as wholesaling lease options, which is exactly what we specialize in and what I've specialized in since 2003, having done well over 700 lease option transactions. If you have questions about lease options, this is the podcast you want to be listening to. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there about real estate investing, but this is the only podcast devoted specifically to the niche of lease options. We answer all of your questions and guide you through actual real transactions, both of our own, our students, and our listeners. So what do you say? Let's get started with the next episode of the Lease Option Experience. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Lease Option Experience. I'm your host, John Jackson, and this right next to me is...
I am Joe Seske, Master Coach.
Master Coach. Well, we finally got this episode off. Nobody has any idea what goes on behind the scenes to make this...
A lot of movie magic,
a lot of moving pieces here to bring all this together, but it's worth it for our avid fans, isn't it, Joe?
Yes.
So it seems like it's been a while since we've been in the studio, but a lot of things have been going on. We have our dream partners, our students are doing, bring us a ton of leads, a ton of deals. We just got done with a 5-day masterclass turned into a 7 or 8 day masterclass. We had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people following us on that masterclass. Got a lot of new friends and followers from that, but shared a lot of good content as well. And of course, we have coming up, we have a 3-day live event.
I'm excited. Yeah. Where is that, John?
So our next one is in Southlake, Texas, which is by Fort Worth. So basically call it Fort Worth by DFW Airport. And it is a 3-day live boot camp. And Joe, did you know that you and I are the only ones in the entire nation, I would dare say the entire universe, that offer a 3-day live boot camp on lease options? The only boot camp on lease options.
I'm not aware of any others. No, there is no other. You don't want to miss it.
Nope. So about 3 or 4 times a year, we have these 3-day live events where we just deliver 3 days of solid content. And we've got one coming up. Well, of course, by the time people hear this, it'll be in the past. But you can just go to leaseoptionclasses.com to see our upcoming schedule of where we're having events.
Or nextbootcamp.com, too.
You can go to nextbootcamp.com. Mm-hmm. Yep, you can go to nextbootcamp.com. So I know you know I've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but we've got someone very, very important waiting to bring on to the show here. And he couldn't make it, so we brought on Blair Halver instead. So I'm really excited to have Blair Halver on here. I know he's been trying to. we've been messing with the technical stuff for about 30 minutes now. But Blair, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, you got me.
Yay! There you are, Blair. Man, hey Blair. First of all, thank you so much for putting up with the delay.
He looks like
here.
A Blair.
He does look like a Blair, doesn't he?
Thank you. Hey, I'll take that as a compliment.
Dad, don't. But so Blair, you are in North Carolina, correct?
Yeah, just outside Winston-Salem, North Carolina, hometown here.
Beautiful area.
And I've never been to North Carolina. But so you're in North Carolina. And so just let's do a quick little introduction of who the heck is Blair Halver. Tell us a little bit about who you are, kind of your background with real estate, and then also into the education field. So take it away, Blair.
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on here. It's an honor and a privilege to be on with you guys. And, you know, I started back in real estate just before the last crash. I bought my first investment property, and then I think less than 18 months later had to short sell it. Big triumphant failure. But you know what? We call that a seminar, right? And I didn't lose too much money, so it was all good. And you live and learn and grow on from there. So started doing wholesaling way back then. Started a marketing company called DealBot. We did lead gen, motivated seller lead gen for investors all across the country for a better part of 10 years. And then got back into doing my own deals again, this time more on the creative financing side. And lease options, my favorite exit strategy in the world. Love it. And I got some that are cashing out now out of my portfolio. And man, those are sweet paydays coming in. Those good.
Let me back up just a little bit. So, because you covered a lot of stuff in a short amount of time there. So you got into real estate, call it in 07, 08, I guess, ish. Got this first investment property and then had to short sell it because market was crashing and everything. But then you said you got into lead generation. Is that right?
Yeah. So what I started doing wholesale deals, did a handful of those, and I realized, man, this sucks. The only part of it that I liked was doing the marketing part of it. And I thought, well, what if I could just do marketing and lead gen for other investors and let them do all the work I didn't want to do and, you know, play to your strengths, right? So I, you know, went deep into the marketing world that way.
What didn't you like about wholesaling specifically?
Oh man, talk about a lot of,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, I'm just really lazy. I just delegate everything now, so.
But what was it you didn't like so much about wholesaling? Because we get that so much.
Yeah.
So you're in the education field as well as we are. And yeah. I would say 80 to 90% of our students that come to us have tried to do wholesaling before and they felt like bashing their skulls in because it's just not as easy or as glamorous as what it may appear to be. And I've certainly done some wholesaling before and it's just, I don't even like it, to be honest with you. But what did you not like about wholesaling?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like two big things. First of all, on the seller side, when you're dealing with these sellers, you got to talk to a ton of sellers that aren't motivated, never going to give you a deal, start beating the price, and you finally get a deal under contract, and then you're turned out to all these cash buyers in your area, keep beating you up on price. You know, they don't want, you know, they're cheap. They don't want to pay, you know, what you're asking and all that sort of thing. And, you know, by the time you get the deal done, you're looking at that little, you know, $3,500 check. And I'm like, man, was it really worth it? There's got to be an easier way, right?
Yeah. And you know what? A lot of people don't see that side of wholesaling. Or they don't realize, you know, they don't see that side before they, you know, buy this course or that course and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on direct mail and bandit signs and this and that. And I didn't start off with wholesaling. I just went straight into lease options when I got started in real estate. And I guess you did too. Mm-hmm. So I didn't find out till later when I did some wholesale deals about, wow, this is a real pain in my butt. You know, this is not worth it. The nasty houses, the negotiating, the whole, you know, I had to come up with how much is it going to cost to fix this house. I'm like, I got no clue. I have no idea, but I had to come up with numbers magically, you know, and just pull them out of my butt. So I didn't like wholesaling. So having said that, so you got into lead generation.
That's an interesting transition.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about what that looked like, because there's different ways to generate
leads. And what year was that you started lead gen?
Yeah. So I started DealBot, the marketing company, in 2009. And like I said earlier, the thing that led me to that decision was realizing after doing a handful of wholesale deals, the part that I was best at and that I enjoyed the most, and you know, if we all want to play to our strengths, was the marketing part, the lead gen. So the idea was, you know, what if I could just do that part of the business without having to do all the other stuff that I didn't like doing, you know, and I could just partner with other investors to generate leads for them. So it started locally.
Then grew to national. You didn't have PropStream or, you know, all the fancy softwares we do now. So that was smart.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Back in the day when we started, we were, you know, charging per lead and we were using direct mail postcards to generate all our leads. We've since moved on from that. I tell you, we've tried everything, you know, ringless voicemail, text, you know, Google, Facebook ads. Right now, we're getting the best bang for our buck with Facebook ads.
Okay. So you still have DealBot, is that right?
Yeah, we shifted gears. We converted our marketing service over into a coaching and training service. So instead of done for you leads, it's sort of like done with you leads. And what we found is that when we bring the clients in on the process of generating the leads in a done with you format, they get better results. They're happier with our service and they take ownership in the process. So you know, the problem, if you've ever done just lead gen for other people, is that half the clients will get great results and the other half won't. And you're sending the same type of leads out. Right. But either way, they're all going to blame you if they don't do deals out of your leads, right? Even though it's their fault. So
I'm curious. So Joe and I have tried the done for you stuff. And as any educator will tell you, that is, you know, just shoot me now. The done for you,
yeah.
Just doing everything. I mean, why do the done for you? Why not just start your own business? You know? So with the done with you for lead generation, what does that look like? Done with you.
Yeah. So we converted it to that done with you format where we have a training portal. We show them exactly how to run the campaigns just like we were running them. And then we coach and guide them through the actual process of doing that and running the campaigns. However, when I started that program, I realized that if all I'm going to do is teach somebody how to generate the leads, but I don't teach them what to do with those leads after they come in, I'm doing them a disservice. And so we just kind of, the scope kept growing. And, you know, before you know it, you know, the coaching program was lead gen, negotiating with sellers, selling deals, and all the different parts in between.
So Joe, Blair's got a very, very successful coaching program as well. He's very active in real estate, does a lot of deals, and does a lot of coaching as well. Before we get into lease options and all that stuff, which is really what the show's about, let's talk a little bit about what is your coaching program? What does that look like as far as, like for me, I've got myself, who I only coach a small number, but then I've got Joe that does the bulk of it as the lead coach. And I've got another coach, David. So I've got two coaches and myself that we're doing like some very small group coaching. Then we have some bigger group coaching. But you've got, but we have, I don't know, 50 or so students. We keep it pretty small, but you've got quite a few though, Blair. Is it just you? You don't have a coaching staff, or do you? Maybe I'm wrong.
You know, I actually, I've got a business partner. His name's Jeff, and he's actually got a lot more experience in the business than I do. He's been doing this 20 plus years. And we both came up under the same, you know, initial guidance in the business. Ron LeGrand taught us to be transactional engineers. You know what I mean? And so that's what we focus on with our students. You know, we focus on teaching them how to become a transactional engineer so that they can do a deal with any lead that comes their way. So that's the big focus of the program.
Okay. And so then you and Jeff are working pretty closely with the students on those leads?
That's right. Yeah, we actually run five Q&A calls every week. So Monday through Friday, we're on with our students in a small group Zoom call setting. In between calls, of course, we've got the Facebook group and Voxer access, and they can get on with our acquisitions team and everything else.
I got you. Huh. Okay. We use, because we have the Facebook group, we've got Joe uses Slack. Joe and David use Slack, you know, for communication and where you can upload documents and this and that with the students. And then we do just a small group. But anyway, so taking it to the next step is let's talk about lease options while everybody's tuning in here. So talk to us a little bit about your experience doing lease options.
Yeah. So like I said earlier, lease options. Yeah. Go ahead.
So where did you start doing lease options? Because a lot of people start off with wholesaling like you did. They may go to some fix and flip. And then they kind of divert, and either they may do some subject to, or sometimes they go to lease options. So talk to us a little bit about your journey with lease options.
Yeah. So, you know, way back when I started 08, 09, I did those wholesale deals, then moved over to just doing marketing. Around 2016 is when I got back into doing my own deals again. And this time I said, I don't want to do just wholesale deals. I want to be the true transactional engineer. And for me, that meant getting more into buying and selling on terms, whether it's seller finance, sub two, lease option, sandwich leases, lease option assignments, you know, all that sort of thing. The creative financing side is what really piqued my interest, because not only can you basically make the same front end payday as a wholesaler. And then if you stay in the deal, you get the monthly cash flow and then the back end equity to boot, right? So that, you know, nowadays what we'll typically do, like my bread and butter deal, we'll buy a house sub two. If the seller's owed any equity, we'll give them a carry back with no payments, no interest, no balloon. And then we'll sell it, quote unquote, sell it on a lease option to a tenant buyer.
So, so for those people watching or listening, so what Bernard's talking about is these leads that come in where the seller's in a more desperate position than the sellers that you and I work with, where the seller's willing is willing to deed you the house and let you just take over the payments. Right, but then you lease option on the backside. On the BC transaction, you're lease optioning it. Is that
sandwich
correct?
Lease option, right?
Well, no, because it's not a sandwich because he doesn't have a lease option on the front. He's oh, taking okay. it subject to
I didn't hear.
Okay. on the front and lease option in the back. Is that right, Blair?
That's right. My preference is to get the deed, and that way I'm in total control and I own the property then and I get all the benefits of ownership. We have done some sandwich leases. Nothing wrong with that. I just prefer to be in total control and you know, never have to get the seller's permission to do anything after that. You know what I mean?
So that conversation, say between you and a seller, Blair, where you have that initial conversation with them and you're trying to get a feel for their situation, they have a money problem, a property problem, a family problem, or a combination of those three. You know, with what Joe and I do, we specialize in lease option assignments. So these sellers are not really desperate. They're just kind of looking for plan B. But what you're describing is a seller that is more, you know, they're more desperate. So talk to us about that conversation where with us, we don't, on a lease option assignment, we're not taking the deed. We're just flipping the paper, right? But for you to get the deed, what does that sound like when you're talking to the seller? And what you're saying is, hey, I'm going to take over your payments and you deed it over to me and you have no control over anything. And now I own your house.
Yeah, that's exactly how we say it. No, I'm just kidding. John, this is why you don't buy sub two.
That's right. Yeah. Because I'm too honest and transparent.
Yeah. No, we just, and really, it just depends on the seller's situation. You know, I said, that, you know, the bread and butter deal for me is to buy sub two because most sellers we deal with have a mortgage in place. Right. And so instead of doing a wraparound mortgage or anything else like that, we just take over the debt and we just tell the seller, look, the only way I can buy your house is by taking over your payment. Is that going to keep you up at night? Right. Now, here's the good news, Mr. Seller. You know, you're free and you can just move on. I'm going to take care of everything from here on out and we'll take over your payment as soon as we close on the house and you're good to go. Now, the loan does stay in your name temporarily until we cash you out at some point in the future. Now, if that's going to keep you up at night, maybe we shouldn't do this, but you tell me. Most of them, like you were saying, are a little more desperate than others. And so they'll say yes. But I will say there's a caveat to that. You know, most people, you know, from the outside looking in, they think, oh, man, what seller would do that? Right. They got to be, you know, so desperate, you know, about to like kill themselves because they need this cash or whatever. But we've had plenty of sellers. They'll sell to us either sub two if they have a mortgage. Or I can think of a couple of deals in particular where they own the house free and clear and they just finance it to us with a very small down payment, very low monthly payment. And we got a heck of an upside on that. Principal only payments on the monthly payment. So and they didn't need the cash. Like they owned this $400,000 house free and clear. They had just moved away to another house 3 hours away and they were tired of dealing with it. They didn't need money. So I gave them $5,000 down and like $1,200 a month until paid.
Mm-hmm. And so in that case, so they're creating a note with you, between them and you. You get the deed to the house, but there's a note there. So if you don't make your payments, they foreclose. But then on the BC side, you could wrap it if you wanted to. You could do a lease option. You could rent it out, Airbnb it, whatever you wanted to do.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Because, I mean, once you own it, once you take title to it, whether it's subject to their existing debt or seller financed or whatever, I mean, you're the owner, just as if you had financed it any other way, even traditionally, right? On that particular one, because here in North Carolina, the most advantageous exit for me is a lease option. That's what we do on almost all of our deals. So that particular one, we sold it on a lease option. We bought it for $413 with five down. We sold it for $450 with $45 down on a lease option. and made about $500 to $700 a month cash flow on that.
Now, so Blair's in North Carolina. North Carolina is one of the only is one of the few states that has specific laws about about lease options.
Yes, to record that memorandum.
Yeah, you got to record that. You have to record the option, or the seller does.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, you're right. North Carolina is one of the only ones. We have a whole statute just for lease options, which sounds bad, but you know, you look at it the other way. I actually kind of like it because now, as long as we follow the letter of the law, nobody can say nothing. Like nobody could complain at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What else is in that statute for North Carolina? The seller has to file the option.
Memorandum of option.
Yep. Memorandum. Yeah. Yeah. And what else is in the statute for North Carolina?
The other main things, the biggest thing is the memorandum has to be filed. The other thing is they have to give them at least one chance to cure a default within a 12-month period. And then there's other little things like they have to have like a big notice in 14-point font right above the signature line, you know, right of rescission, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Texas has some of their verbiage and has to be in 14-point font and this and that. Apparently, when people don't pay their bills, apparently their eyesight goes bad as well. And
yeah.
They have to have a bigger font in the notice of default.
Yeah.
So, so when you on your lease option that you do on the BC side, so you've got the property. Let's see, took it subject to, and now you're going to lease option on the back end. Mm-hmm. With your paperwork, of course, North Carolina has specific statutes, but on your paperwork, are you using your traditional lease with a separate option of purchase?
Yeah. We want to keep those separate and we don't give them rent credit so that there's no cross contamination other than cross default if they were to default on either of them.
Okay. Yeah. We don't offer rent credits either. We haven't since 08 or 09.
Yeah. No need. I think it just makes the paperwork messy, you know?
What's the timing from when you, because this would probably be important, or I think a lot of people would be wondering about this. So from the point that you take over the property subject to, you're now responsible to make payments. Do you have the buyers lined up, or do you then market it once you have the inventory, or do you find the buyers first? What's kind of your process for that?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the time, we'll line up our buyer before we close. The only time we would go ahead and close on the property without the buyer lined up is if it was just a smoking hot deal, some, giant piece of equity, low payments, nothing down, and it's a beautiful house, I'd probably go ahead and close on that just to protect the deal, make sure it didn't fall through,
So, and by the way, of course, it was a great question. That's all Joe asks. Joe only asks the most intelligent questions. So
he doesn't like me. I love John.
So you're saying that you try not to close until you have the buyer. So what is it? Are you just, if that's the case, are you saying you're not going to make payments till you find a buyer to the seller, or are you just kind of slow playing the seller till you have a buyer?
We actually, when we go into the deal with the seller, we sign the purchase agreement with them. We pre-print all our purchase agreements with 90 days to close. And, the next question after you sign a purchase agreement with any seller or buyer, whatever kind of transaction, the next question is always, all right, so when can we close, right? Mm-hmm. Well, typically, we go ahead and start lining up our buyer. We may already have one in the database here locally, we'll go ahead and let you know. We'll shoot for 30 days, and then if we have to, we'll push it out to 60, and then in a rare case, we'll push it out to 90 if we have to. But we tell them, look, we pre-print everything with 90 days. Doesn't mean it's going to take that long. We'll close as soon as we can, that sort of thing. But we're not making payments until we close.
Right. What are some of the ways that you're marketing for your buyers? And also, what are some of the ways you're marketing for buyers? And typically, what are you asking for an option fee as far as a percentage or or dollar amount?
Yeah, so marketing for buyers, primarily Facebook ads, so paid ads on Facebook. And then we used to use Craigslist a lot, and that was a big source of buyer leads for us. Now it seems all that those Craigslist people have moved over to Facebook Marketplace. Mm-hmm. So that's where we get a lot of our buyer leads now. And, you know, it's the same with buyer leads as it is with seller leads. You got to get a bunch of them in, you screen them, you send them out to the house, send the good ones out and see if they like it, you know.
So those buyer leads that come through Facebook Marketplace, you've got an ad. I'm just thinking here, Blair, you've got an ad that says, you know, stop renting, you can buy a nice house or whatever, something like that. And it takes them to a Carrot site or something where they put their information in. Is that right?
Well, on the paid ads, we actually use lead forms, Facebook lead forms, if you're familiar with that. The little form pops up right on Facebook. On Facebook Marketplace, it's you have to do it a little bit more organically. You can't have all the right. automation in there. So we send those over to our VA or our local acquisitionist.
It's very similar to what we do. We kind of, Keon is working our ads because we kind of gave up on the money pit there, but we do use Facebook Marketplace a lot. We boost our ads. It's all very passive. I don't want to make any announcements because it's not set in stone, but we may have a secret weapon coming online soon.
Dun, dun. Did you ever you follow up with
I have to,
Scott
yeah.
on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I will. I will.
We can't tell you what that is, no. Blair, but we're working on some big stuff. Big.
Well, sounds good, man.
Tremendous.
You gotta give me like the sneak peek after the show or something.
No, it's not. It's not coming to North Carolina.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So you get these buyer leads coming in, and you said you may have like a VA or whatever. They're putting them into this database, if you will. Mm-hmm. Then are you just blasting this database with an email? Hey, we got this new house, or what? Like, how are you vetting these leads from the buyers?
Yeah, what we found, especially on Facebook, it is a numbers game, right? You know, most of them are not even serious, and then, you know, they don't qualify. So how do you, like John said, how do you go through all those?
For the buyer leads specifically, you know, the buyer leads are much easier to get than the seller leads. They're a lot cheaper leads, right? You get a lot more of them. So you got to go through them as efficiently as possible. And so we got to let them do some of the work. So once they respond to the ad, they'll get an automatic text asking them to call. The whole point of all the automation that we run is to get them on the phone, get the qualified people on the phone.
Right.
And the initial qualification is, you know, do they have a significant interest in the house, number one. Then we get them on the phone. We ask them all the financial pre-qualifying questions that way. We find that a phone conversation is the best way to get that info, like, you know, what do you need your monthly payment to stay under? What's the most you could put down towards your beautiful new home? You know, that sort of thing.
I love hearing that. I just have some research. Oh, do we have to talk? You know, I always push, you have to talk to people. And everybody wants to hide behind a Carrot site or a form. One cool thing about Facebook too, though, is, and you can't, like you said, Marketplace is a little bit different, but when you're doing your ads, you can have them fill out the questions, you know, step by step. Do you want to own and not just rent? Do you understand that this is the down payment, this is the rent, right? And then and only then you could have them, you know, have access to you or collect their data. That seems to be the trend moving forward here.
Yeah, you know, with lead gen, and I've been in the lead gen business a long time, you know, it's always a balance between quality and quantity. And the way you control that is by fine tuning how much friction you put between the initial click and when you talk to them.
It's an art.
Yeah, man.
On your marketing to sellers, you know, Joe and I do a number of different ways. We teach our students a number of different ways. But we tell them to really pretty much focus on one or two ways and really dial that in. I think our favorite way is really direct mail that we do. And then, of course, there is some, you know, some texting and that we'll do as well. We've got multiple ways that we'll teach. But our number one way is, or at least I think our favorite is direct mail. Mm-hmm. Now, what we do, Blair, is we'll do direct mail to, we actually do listed houses. We'll do direct mail to listed houses. Houses that are, say, over 30 DOM, 60 DOM, 90 DOM. We'll hit those with a couple of different mail pieces. We'll also do, you know, scrape for sale by owner, for rent by owner, send text to for sale by owner and for rent by owner. What are some of the ways that, because you're in lead generation business, what are some of the ways that you really like? It sounds like you like direct mail, or you like direct mail. Is that still what you like a lot?
Yeah, you know, when we started the lead gen business, direct mail was all we used. That was our primary source of lead gen. Over the years, we've tested a whole bunch of stuff, including, you know, a lot of the stuff that you mentioned. And we never called listed properties. We always called the expired listings. That was another good source, as well as FSBOs and FRBOs and that sort of thing. Nowadays, we love Facebook ads for generating seller leads and for buyer leads, but especially on the seller lead side. And nowadays, we're advertising nationwide, and so we can get our cost per lead way down as opposed to focusing just locally on Facebook.
Yeah, because when you focus locally, then you're going to your cost per lead goes up.
Yeah, that's right.
So, all right. So we got about 40 seconds here left on the old purple timer here. Any final questions for Mr. Blair? However, you got Joe.
Let's see. You have a new house. You grew up in North Carolina, or did you just recently move there?
Yeah, you know, I moved around a lot when I was a kid, but North Carolina is where I call home. That's where I went to high school, met my wife here. My wife was born and raised here. We got a lot of family in the area. We actually just recently bought our dream home back in our hometown. We moved back close to the family, and we haven't even got everything set up yet.
Yeah,
thanks. You'd be surprised, man. You can get a lot of house for the money here in North Carolina.
So our little timer hit zero. We don't give a crap about our timer. So Blair, let's go ahead and address the elephant in the room here. And when I say elephant in the room, I mean the elephant over your left shoulder that you're so proud of.
What is that?
You don't know what that is?
The golden record? What is that?
Well, Blair, talk about that. You've got a whole wall of it, but you only got one up there on the
YouTube views.
I hadn't hung them all up yet. I got a handful of these two Comma Club awards. This is from ClickFunnels, the marketing platform.
Oh, wow.
Russell Brunson, his old thing. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That is cool, actually.
That means he's conned people into giving him millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Is what that means.
You know, what's interesting about it, though, is the first one took about 9 years to get. The second one took 12 months, and the third one took like 7 or 8 months. So they're just
none of your friends will know or value what that award is.
No, that's all right though.
unless they do online marketing or sell product, they don't know what that is. Yeah. So I'm in the I'm in the one decimal club.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Well, so the last time I saw Blair was in Key West, and I said hi, and he said hi, and then he took off with coronavirus or something. You had to fly home.
I woke up that first morning of the event. I was like, I do not feel good. And the last thing I wanted to do was get one of the OGs, like Ron LeGrand, sick with COVID, and then he dies, and then everybody's blaming me for ruining the industry and all this sort of thing. So We left home early.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you flew home in a packed plane. That's great.
Right. Turns out I did not have COVID.
At least you saved the industry. Right. You just wrecked an airline industry, yeah.
Well, I know we've got to wrap this up here. I guess we'll see you again, Blair, we'll see you in September, right? End of September?
Yeah. Yeah, man. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a great event.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to go to that one.
Yeah. So we'll see you. It's a little bit early this year, but we'll see you there, Blair. And kind of wrapping this up here, Blair, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for being on here. I know you're busy. You just moved to your new house. All those blind lemmings that paid you millions and millions of dollars for your overpriced, overbloated course paid you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, John. Appreciate that.
Come on, man. So, Blair, let's say this.
How can we find you?
How can the average person donate more to your new house fund?
if you just go to blairhalver.com, it's blairhalver.com. I'm sure you're going to put a link in the show notes or whatever you do on your end.
Actually, you know who splices and dices these shows is Josh Culler.
Oh, really? All right, Josh, put that in for me, please.
Yeah, so Josh is going to cut this up into like 14 pieces of content. You know how Josh is, right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Blair. Again, guys, go to BlairHalver.com. Is that right? BlairHalver.com. I tried to buy JohnJackson.com, and I have not heard back from GoDaddy yet. They said they're still in negotiations. Before, if you went to JohnJackson.com, it was a motivational speaker, actually.
Interesting.
A speaker and author. But if you just Google John Jackson, I'm a black boxer from Britain.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you got to work on your tan there.
70s or 80s or something. Yeah, well, I think I look tan in these lights here, but
that's still the first Google result over John.
Yeah, that black boxer was going to kick my ass in Google. Yeah, I wonder if he's in the 2-comma club. All right, hey, Blair, thank you so much. If we've been on here for guys, if you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to subscribe, hit the thumbs up, leave comments and questions. If you leave a comment, don't say any curse words about Blair Halver or how he hosed you on some overpriced course or something like that. But leave comments, questions. We will reply to you. Poor Blair.
We will. Seriously, man.
No, in all truth, Blair's got some of the best stuff, some of the best content out there from an education standpoint, because he's actually, as you can see, he's doing the stuff, you know, just like we are. We're down in the foxholes doing the, you know, in the dirt, doing the deals. So, again, guys, subscribe, hit thumbs up, leave questions and comments. Blair, sir, thank you so much for your time, man, and we'll see you in September, if not before then, man.
All right, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks.
All right, Blair, get off my show. Go. Turn off your camera. You gotta go. I'm done with you. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of the Lease Option Experience. I hope you got a lot of information out of that episode. Again, if you have any questions about lease options, email us questions@leasingtobuy.com. Again, that's questions@leasingtobuy.com. And again, if you haven't yet, subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a thumbs up on any platform that you're listening to or watching us on. Again, questions@leasingtobuy.com. And if you haven't, again, go to leaseoptionclasses.com. Get all your free downloads, a lot of great information, including the steps to lease option, a lease option calculator, my seller price sheet, and even my comparison sheet. Again, that's leaseoptionclasses.com. And we've got a lot more training videos there as well. And you can even learn more about the Lease Options 2.0 training information. All right, take care, and we'll see you on the next episode.